you have a constitutional right to conceal a weapon without a carry permit.
I have a right to keep a gun at home. The court says so.
You were on the street.
A man's home is where his heart is. In my case, the penis.
Do you have any idea how many people die from gun violence in this country?
Yeah. Let's make a law. No carrying guns. I'm sure the criminals will obey it.
Show me where in the Constitution it says you can walk the streets armed without a carry permit.
The Constitution says whatever the Supreme Court says it says. As for what the Supreme Court says, that all depends on who's president.
Move the strike.
You don't have to be a legal genius to know that if you've got a president in office who likes guns, and a vice president who likes to hunt lawyers and quail, and a Supreme Court justice who hunts with him, you're going to have a constitutional right to shoot bad guys in the knee.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Live.
Yeah, how accurate was that, Denny Crane? What about as accurate as I can get, eh?
Very true.
It was Boston Legal, one of the most, I think, one of the greatest written shows I've ever heard. But, Denny Crane, I think he did a better job really there almost than he did in as Captain Kirk in a lot of ways.
I think you're pushing it on that there, Chief, but. A lot better than he did in T.J. Hooker. I think they basically gave William Shatner a lot of free rein, and, man, it really was funny.
I mean, he was the look on the judge's face was always the same judge as he went through all this stuff was always pretty amazing. But all right, S&P futures, we are down a little bit today, down 28. NASDAQ futures down 87, which isn't that much on the NASDAQ because that was up a real lot yesterday. It's 30 points down in the S&P futures. It was up 150 yesterday, so we're still maintaining most of the gains, although allegedly, you read this stuff, the strait is closed again because Israel has decided this is free rein on Lebanon. They killed or injured 1,000 people yesterday, according to the Lebanese. And, they seem to think that they can keep shooting wherever they want. It's not part of the ceasefire. Well, that's their opinion. Other people seem to have other opinions. I'm not like so sure whose opinion is going to win out. But the fact is, I don't think they want a ceasefire. But that's just me. It's hard to tell what people want or don't want. But allegedly, the negotiations are starting tomorrow.
With J.D. Vance, Vance, the sacrificial lamb.
Oh, Vance,
yes.
Whitcliffe, and Kirshner.
With Kirshner.
Yeah. How that's happening, I have no idea, but nobody asked me.
First off, the Iranians will not deal with Kirshner. They already know who's he. He is Netanyahu's proxy. They already know that.
Yep.
Every time Netanyahu comes to the United States, guess where he stays? At the Kirshners.
That's really something, that he would stay there and not the Willard or someplace. How do you protect? I mean, what do they do? Put the army around the guy's house?
No, on the Israelis, yes.
That's a. Well, if you're. I don't know. Are those guys Orthodox?
I don't know if he's Orthodox or observant, but he is clearly. They are Jewish first, American second.
Because if you're Orthodox, you don't usually stay in. You got to stay in a place that's kosher, right?
He according to Ivanka, they do practice kosher.
All right. Well, then you got to stay at somebody's house that's kosher. It's not just the food; it's the all the plates and everything.
Yes, you have two sets of dishwashers, two sets of sinks. You might even have two sets of refrigerators, so you can't mix the
Well, that's assuming that you have anything that's non-kosher in the house. Most people don't. I mean, if you go there, you're eating kosher, which is fine with me. I mean, I don't mind.
Give Jared and Ivanka a call, and you can stop on by.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready for that, but anyway. So that's what's happening. So some of the other... You see, with the head of Spain, of course, nobody likes him because he wouldn't let us bomb people from his bases. They asked him about the truce, and he said it's really hard to applaud the fire starter.
Very true.
Yeah.
I was watching the BBC, and they are pretty blunt about it. They don't think that this truce is going to last. They think Iran is clearly outplaying Trump because they know that if anyone's going to break it, it's going to be the Israelis. And the Israelis are part of
this. Well, the thing of it is, with the Iranians, though, nobody even knows who we're talking to. I mean, who's in charge?
Whoever picks up the phone.
Evidently, yeah.
Well, they do know that they could shut that the Straits of Hormuz down when they want. And
all they have to do is just say they're going to do something. But stuff is getting through. And I don't know if they're just going through on their own. They're not. They're quiet on the stuff that's going through. According to the article I read, they'll all have their transponders off. Now I don't know what that does to you, but some people doesn't mean like they can't see you. I mean, I would think they'd be able to see you.
Oh yeah, I mean things. Shipping is going through, but at a very, very slow rate.
It's only like 15 a day or something.
Right, and normally it's 60.
So we get a load of this. The Pope has evidently canceled his U.S. visit because the Pentagon's all over him for criticizing the war.
So did King Charles.
Yeah.
But the Pope could do it, but the Department of War could do what they want, you know. Hegseth likes to be on TV. He used to be a TV guy.
So get a load of this. I mean, I don't know where we're getting this now, but Fox News overnight reports that the State Department is planning to revoke the visas of thousands of Iranians that live in the U.S. and have lived here for a while.
Of course, they're the enemy.
These are the beautiful people of Iran that Trump was trying to save. Where exactly do you send them?
Uganda, or who just allowed us to?
I mean, do we have flights? Because these people are elites. It's so crazy. Why are there so many elites in the Iranian regime being given safety, not only in America but in European countries for so long? Because they got out of there. They were successful in getting out of there, just like Trump's grandfather from Germany when he got booted out. Boy, these guys are whatever. How did what's-his-name get here from Cuba? Isn't the Secretary of State originally from Cuba?
Oh, Rubio? Yeah, his family's Cuban.
Okay, so why don't we send them back?
Well, the Cubans are having more fun undoing their jails than sending them here.
I don't know. This is crazy stuff, but anyway, the thing we're worried about more is the market. So, the market was the Kevin says that Netanyahu stayed at Kushner's house when Jared was a teenager. I would agree with that. Can't imagine he comes over on a state visit and stays there now. But he did stay when they were younger, so the family has been together for a while. Anyway, the question is, what do you do with the markets here? We had some stocks that were way up yesterday. Some stocks, a few weren't. Obviously, Chevron, if you've been riding this oil wave for a while, you get a little bit of a pause back yesterday. The XLE is the oil piece of the S&P, which we have a lot of people in because a lot of people want to be in that. It was down yesterday. It's up a little bit today. Let me see where the oil prices are. They're probably up a little bit. By the way, we did get the answer yesterday. Our oil at West Texas is $99.30. That's up $4.89. Brent is up $371.98.46. And what I understand from discussing with somebody who really knows these markets, if you look at our oil futures going forward, you'll see that they drop down going forward as people think and hope and pray and whatever that this thing is going to be over in the Middle East soon and oil prices are going to come back to more normal levels. So if you look out in your oil futures, like next year futures are much lower than today. And when Brent went way ahead of the West Texas, which it very rarely does, a lot of that was due to the fact that the Brent expiration of the contract was closer than the West Texas. So now they've sort of evened up. West Texas is 99 and Brent is 98. So that's part of that game. RBOB is now back up 7 cents to 308, and again, depending on the taxes in your state, and whoever it takes to get from the wholesale facility to your gas station, and if you want any kind of profit, I have to believe it's got to be at least, what do you think, Jimmy, 8-10 cents a gallon to move it. But I don't know. I'm just guessing that. And you've got to make something. So I would say you'd probably want to add $1.25 or $1.30 at least in Illinois to that number to get your retail price, which would put you at $4.30, which is about where it is, right? So it's kind of running true to form. Illinois has more taxes than anybody else. And, oh, by the way, the taxes go up, and the sales taxes go up with the price of gas going up. So never think for a second that inflation does not benefit your governmental creatures at pretty much every level. So, I mean, the Chicago sales tax, every sales tax goes up when the price of gas goes up. Indiana, the governor is saying he's pulling back on the state gas tax. I don't see Jay Pritzker hinting at that at all, do you?
Nope.
I mean, Illinois, they want every nickel they can get, which they do in Indiana, too, probably, but at least the guy's rolling with public opinion right now and cutting the gas tax down for a bit. And, in Illinois, I think it's got to be pushing a buck, because don't forget, we pay sales tax on the other tax.
Oh, yeah.
Which is...
But don't we pay Illinois and Cook County and...
Well, there's... Let me see if I can find it here, but the gasoline tax in Illinois, it's up to... Well, you have the federal. Let me find it. So your Cubbies won yesterday.
Yes, they did.
What was the? I don't know if you know this or not. I thought that they were going to basically bleep can that stadium in Tampa Bay. It got wrecked. And evidently, they did fix it because they were playing there this year.
Yeah, I guess. I guess it's partially fixed. They didn't have anyone in the upper decks.
Well, they did that because they don't have anywhere near the crowds they want. So they close the upper deck to make it a more intimate experience.
Ah. Well, the Cubs did win 6-2, and the Sox lost.
Motor fuel tax rate 43 cents per gallon, 48.3. Total tax burden often over 66 cents per gallon when including federal fees, sales tax, and local tax. I think it's more than that. I think it's more like 90 cents, but let's... Anyway, I'll figure that out for tomorrow. But especially in Chicago, it's pretty high because the sales tax is what, 11?
It's 10 or 10.5.
I'll get the whole list of this because it's pretty high, and here, Illinois, gas tax in Chicago. State motor fuel tax is 43 cents. The federal's what, 12 or 18?
Something like that.
66 cents a gallon. When combining state, federal, and local Chicago, Cook County taxes, the burden frequently exceeds 80 cents a gallon. All right, so make it high 80s and not 90. It was a little bit of exaggeration, but not much. I don't know if that includes the sales tax in some places, but maybe it does. So we're pushing 90 cents. Here we go. 48.3 cents Illinois motor fuel, 18.4 federal, state sales taxes applied, local taxes applied as well. So there you go. So I don't know if that's a... What do you think? I mean, market-wise here, when you see one of the reasons that the market ran up so much yesterday, in one man's opinion, of course trying to figure out why markets are up or down is always a kind of a fool's errand, but... The CPI comes out tomorrow. PCE is today, so it's an active week in terms of people talking about inflation. And the original story was that the CPI was going to be 1% tomorrow for the month, without fuel and energy, without fuel and food, it was going to be 0.3. So we're bracing for this 1% hit. Which is a lot, because obviously 1 times 12 is 12% in a year, and that's 1970s and 1980s numbers. So with the strait being opened again, at least for a day, what that told everybody, hey, it's a one off. So what if it's 1%? Fuel prices are coming down next month. Everything's okay. And I think that's the relief, even if it's not okay, if it's not all just fuel, which I don't think it is. It's going to be. It was a way to get around that number, and now with the straight back closed, but everybody's convinced now we can absorb this 1%. And you heard the president say, oh, hey, all right, it's a short-term thing. By the way, he's back on Greenland. I don't know if you saw that or not.
Of course.
What did he say? It was the worst-run piece of ice in the world, and he's going to go run it better?
Well, I thought he said he wanted to be president of Venezuela, too.
Well, it's... I think a lot of people are thinking this is get out of hand. Some people aren't. Some people feel because they voted for him, there's obviously something in there that they voted for. It's more about them, I think, than it is about him. I don't really understand that psychology. If you buy into a company you think is really good and you find out the president's been cooking the books and the company's not doing so good, it's really not on you. It's on him. I don't understand the part where if I voted for somebody, I have to constantly try and find something good about the person, even if there doesn't seem to be much.
Well, by the way, we do have, I think, John Flanagan on the line.
Mr. Flanagan, how are you?
Good morning, Tom. Morning, Jim.
I hear your neighbor is...
Good morning.
Is from Iran, has been here 20 years, and he's living the good life, and we're kicking him back now.
Getting lost in the shuffle.
Yep. So where exactly do you land somebody over in Iran right now? The place you're going to bomb in the next minute, or what?
I don't know. It will be leaked, whatever it is.
Yeah. So what do you make of all this? I was just mentioning to Jimmy, I think the balm of the strait hopefully being open and oil prices coming back down kind of lets the government jump over this seemingly horrendous CPI number for tomorrow and say it's only going to be a one-month one-off. And I guess people are going to be dumb enough to believe that. But it gives them their out. Because now people aren't as worried about the number as they think they were. What do you think? I mean, what do you think of my logic? Is there any there?
Well, I mean, that wouldn't be the first time there's been a way of cushioning or masking, painful numbers in something, some other story that's more urgent or, likely to distract people. So I don't know. We'll see. And as far as I hope it isn't. I hope it is transitory, shall we say that?
Well, it's out of your pocket. It's not coming back in. That part's not transitory, right?
Well, if it hadn't been, this president or, this agenda or whatever we're in now, I'm quite certain it would have been another one, and it would be Ukraine or something else. So it isn't like everything would have been better or even that different had there been a different president sitting in the White House. So I'm kind of, philosophical about these things at my advanced age.
Well, I mean, I know a guy like you, you spent, some people don't change. I mean, I know you've spent most of your life trying to invent another fetish and been unsuccessful. They've all been invented before, right?
Well, some people are just living it anyway.
I don't know. I mean, as you and I have aged, there always were people when we were young, said, we had to invade Germany or something because someday, it was going to happen. And it might as well happen today while we have more people there and while we had a lot of tanks over there. And so, the fact is, we never did it, and it never needed to happen. Even though Russia was never a good play partner, were they? I mean, Vietnam never had to happen. I mean, we got to stop the communists here. No, we didn't. I mean, there's two examples of one where you laid off and one where you didn't. I would never be in the camp that Iran was good people. I don't know that they were going to last forever. Could we have waited another... We managed to wait this long, right? We've waited long with China. I mean, how do you determine whether you have to go do something or not? Then you turn into a Netanyahu, it's because there's bad people there in other places. Well, there's bad people with him, too. I mean, the idea that you all of a sudden it's your job to anybody who doesn't like you. I mean, Jan, if we walked into a bar and went and interviewed people, there's going to be people there we don't like, people that don't like us. Doesn't mean I'm going to have to fight him someday and you whack him in the nose. I mean, it's just the way things are. I mean, the idea that you have to do something about it. Today, Iran was causing problems in the area, seemingly like we were blunting that, and all of a sudden we had to do something today. I don't know. Today was the day. It may have turned out. You're right that they continued to, instead of the group over there losing power going forward, they gained it, and somehow were able to get even dirty bombs, and they were all assembled and ready to be dropped on people. I mean, that's a problem, but I don't know that it was that urgent today, and I don't think most people feel that way. No, just like,
well, assuming it is not urgent, or never was, but the urgent issues that we talk about on this show, and the Wilsonian urge to go off and spend money you really don't have, and expect allies you may not have to be behind you and to make crusades left and right because you've got some kind of feeling that the U.S. has the power and we know how to wield it and we're not going to wait for other people to figure it out. This is, it's really the legacy of the last, how many 120 years or so of, this country turning into an empire, which at the time was thought to be, part of its destiny. After the Spanish-American War, people really all over the world sat up and took notice of the United States for the first time, really. We were not taken seriously on the international stage, I don't think, until around the 1880s or 1890s, when we became an economic powerhouse first. And then we became a military, power to be reckoned with. And then we became the savior of the world. And, this is, all of the stuff we're dealing with now and have been is somewhat predictable given the way things played out starting about 1910, 1915. And there's a kind of a momentum behind that I don't know how it could be reversed now and how it could be.
Yeah, you can't get rid of this guy in office.
Oh, no, Tom, that would be an end of it. It would just be located in other places.
Well, the idea that somebody, the U.S. with all our foibles, being this worldwide aggressor. I mean, we always have been in the Middle East, by the way, because of the oil, and other people have been too. I mean, the British were first, the French, and then we followed right in. The minute the first piece of oil was found over there, everybody's nose was in it that could, right? Because everybody recognized that was the future. I mean, am I wrong there? I'm not.
And war and the way war was conducted was a big reason for that attitude.
But the idea that somebody is sitting on top of the most incredible military that's ever been devised, even though I think we're degrading it just by using stuff up, I don't know how much, but the idea that somebody here would say, "Oh no, I really want these other countries," and oh, by the way, we're going to do this. And I think a lot of it has to do with what's going on with Israel. I mean, they have had problems with the people around them, weren't great people. But you're also talking about how many deaths on both sides over how many years. It's not like there isn't reason for people there to hate each other. And then now this guy is taking it to the extreme that he's gonna take over Lebanon, it appears. He's going to grab part of Syria if this guy doesn't push back, whoever the new guy is in Syria. I mean, this has turned totally different. I mean, he wants us to do to Iran what he's done to Gaza. And I don't think American people are ready for that. I'm not. Are you?
No, and I don't think Trump is either.
I hope not. I hope not. But he has a couple people around him that are serious white supremacists that have his ear.
Who, white supremacists?
Well, you ever see a picture of J.D. of Hexeth with his shirt off? He's got white supremacist tattoos all over him. I mean, from now on, when we put these people in front of Congress, they might want to see their tattoos. I never would have thought of that, John. Jeez.
How about that guy running for the Senate in May?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he's alone.
Well, that's okay there.
I don't think it's okay anywhere. I mean, do you?
Well, I'm just going the way that, the temperature has taken at this and in the national press. That isn't prevented it becoming the darling of the left right now.
So. Well, did I ever say
these people overlook these things, Tom?
Did I ever say people on the left were harmless? When did I ever say that?
None of this registers in any kind of absolute manner. If you want power at this point,
right?
And you're going to, you know, have to have somebody like a Plattner in, you know, Maine, who, you know, had these tattoos and then told some ridiculous story about how he got them.
Yeah,
and people are willing to say, well, that's okay. You know, we need you more than we care about your tattoos.
Well, that's, you know, I guess. I mean, is anything?
And that is the kind of, you know, relativist world.
Are you comfortable with Steve Miller having an ear to the president? I'm not.
I mean, it's just, they're just, you know, they're gauges of hypocrisy to me.
Without a doubt. I mean, and you know, the weird part of it is that the article somebody sent Wayne last week, it had to do with, it was talking about, you know, Kristi Noem's husband and all. I don't want to go through all the stuff about that guy, but the whole thing is about whenever people run on a ticket like anti-gay or something, it's probably because they're gay. You know, we haven't lost the scarlet letter yet, have we, in this country?
No, and you know, there's a lot of projection in this too.
Yeah,
people rail the loudest against the things that they've done that they don't want people to accuse them of.
That's exactly right. Is there any chance the fledgling middle class that no longer really even exists? I don't know. Maybe it does in a few spots. Is there any chance that the U.S. will end up with a ruling class that isn't crazed one side or the other, that is somewhat in the middle, has some morals? Is there any chance of that?
I don't think there has been for most of our lives, Tom.
I don't know. I think a lot of the...
I mean, we it's been stacked against us, let's just say that, and it has been since I can remember.
So what has... I honestly believe... Of course, now this is a long... I'll say it's a while ago. When I was on the SIBO board, we used to do Washington visits and New York visits, and the guys would come here. And I met, you know, a real lot of people that were... I only met a couple of senators, and I never had a chance to talk to them too much. Actually, the one I did talk to was, what's her name? Carol Moseley Brown. Boy, talk about her getting the wrong boyfriend, huh? But nice lady, and very bright. Anyway, but I mostly talked to representatives, and the ones in these other states, Jen, they're pretty normal. But they weren't speakers or anything like that. But they were just regular people that got elected and went. I mean, it's not... Everything's not like Chicago. You do actually have regular people there trying to do a good job. I don't know if they ever have any power, but they go there with that intention. I honestly believe that. I think you have a lot of those people in the state senate and state reps, maybe not from Chicago, but people I know in Indiana. I mean, Kevin's always talking about how the Indiana politics is a little different. A couple of people I met there, you know, they didn't have bodyguards or anything. They came to the cookout, sat there, talked to you all night long, telling you what they were doing. I mean, they're about as regular as you could get. I mean, I think that's supposed to be what we're all about, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know, we haven't had that kind of, you know, I mean, the Indiana situation hasn't worked in Illinois for a long time.
I mean, no, I don't know.
It's truly a one-party state, and well, it seems
not,
to be
not really.
Steals
not really. Than, there's a lot of Republican reps downstate. State. I'm talking about state.
At their peril, Tom. I mean, we're the gerrymandering example to beat all.
I'm talking about
the
local stuff.
Representation,
the local stuff. I don't know why. You know, everybody on the right loves this electoral college routine. I don't like it the way it is because I don't think that the people who are Republican in Illinois should not be represented. I think in every state we should go. I don't know if I want to go with total up the vote stuff, but I don't see why if you've got 15 representatives and eight of them are Republican or Democrat and the other seven are the other side, why that state gets 15 Republican or Democrat. I don't get that at all. I mean, I would like to see it go whatever district, and I think in Illinois the Democrats would win in Chicago, and I don't see why the Republicans get no vote whatsoever in the Electoral College out of Illinois. And there might actually be a blue count, you know, a blue district in North Dakota, and that district should be...
That's not the fault of the Electoral College, Tom. That's the fault of how, you know, apportionment is done, reapportionment.
I'm talking about...
I think the Electoral College assumed there would be some, you know, there'd be almost an invincible way that you could prevent the dilution of one party's strength once the other party got the upper
hand. What I'm saying is I want people more represented. And the perfect example that was, to me, you know, I'm no statistician like Hal, but I've taken a couple of courses in it. The fiasco in Florida with Bush and Gore. And I'm one of the few people who gets accused of being a Democrat. When they talked about the hanging chads and all that crap. Well, I think Gore got screwed on the hanging chads. All right. I honestly believe that. However, flip side of that, which nobody seems to remember, is that the Florida panhandle is in the central time zone, not the eastern. And it appears that the networks forgot that too. So they called the state for Gore an hour before the polls closed. So I believe, trying to be fair to both sides, that a lot of people who might have been Republican voters in the panhandle never went to vote because they thought it was already over when it wasn't.
Yeah, I don't think the networks forgot that.
Well, whatever. Now you're going to go into lunch into something about how the networks are all Democrat. The point is, I think when the day was done, any statistician would tell you that state was a dead heat. Which means to me that you should have split the electoral votes down the middle and each should have got half. Not one or the other from the Supreme Court, you know, flipping a coin. Why, when you know for sure that it was damn near 50-50, does one side have to get it all? To me, that makes absolutely nothing. No sense whatsoever in a presidential election. Now, people love the Electoral College. Say that's the way it's got to be. Why? Half the people voted one way and half the other. Why does one half not get counted?
I think the bad precedent there was not the Electoral College. It was getting the Supreme Court involved.
Well, either way, it was a dead heat. It was a statistical dead heat, wasn't it?
Yeah, the problem too, Tom, and that lingers in my mind as something we're peculiarly sensitive to now, with the discussion of election fraud and the Save America Act and all this stuff, is that we kind of realize just how fragile the system was that we kind of take it for granted. And one of the things I blame biggest for it was CBS, when it came out with its voter profile analysis, remember VPA, was that 1964 or 1968, where they were predicting, turnout, based on turnout, what the, election was going to be, and they'd call these races very early on election night. Just one more attempt at the time.
Well, I don't care how early they call them, as long as the polls are closed.
Yeah, but then, when they had the power in 2000, and then they gave Gore the state and then took the state away in the blink of an eye. This was, this smelled for a lot of people.
I think the issue was you're doing that while they were still open in some areas.
Well, yeah. Well, of course.
But I don't think that's happened anywhere else, has it?
Well, I hope not. Well, shouldn't happen then. And we should never have allowed any network. And this is something that people kind of glomped onto because it seemed like it was streamlining the whole process, and maybe wouldn't have to sit up all night like people used to do to see who won.
Well, I would hope. And look, in how many states there are states that have that are in two time zones? I would hope that they've learned their lesson and wait till the last one's closed before you make a call.
Well,
Indiana's two time zones, right?
Yeah.
What else?
This was all just part of, I think, a much bigger phenomenon. But I think it's deliberate to some extent. It may have had unintended consequences once it got rolling. But the whole idea of discrediting the election process and making it appear much more tentative and much more easily subverted.
Jenny, you have to. I don't know that much about even though I've been doing a show forever. I don't know that much about. Obviously, we're not that popular show. I mean, we have a lot of listeners that love listening to us, and they get information here they don't get in other places. That part I get, but I mean, in terms of, I just tell you how much I don't know about the industry. Years ago, I used to go on CNBC once in a while. So I go on one morning, and they want to know about Walmart earnings, right? So I get my suit on, and off I go to this place on down the block on LaSalle Street. And I'm sitting in the studio, and I'm in this dark room, and the guy throws a little makeup on my mug, right, which is weird. But I didn't know where I was supposed to be looking, because it's just a dark room, and there was no monitor. So if I didn't know the voices of the people talking, I wouldn't even know who the hell was talking to me, right? So that's a little uncomfortable. So, of course, Audrey's comment was, what the hell, you look like Dick Nixon, your eyes shifting back and forth. I go, what, I didn't know where the camera was. Anyway, so I'm on there, and they're talking about Walmart. Well, they got like five people, and I get like a few words in. Plus, I don't really give a crap about Walmart earnings. We didn't have a whole lot of clients that had it. It's not a stock I really follow that much. So then Joe Kernan says something to the effect, it was the day that Warren Buffett bought the Burlington Northern. So Joe says to me, hey, Tom, do you have any views on that? And I said, well, Joe, it just so happens I know something about railroads. And he goes, really? I said, you know, Burlington Northern is a combination of Northern Pacific, the Great Northern, Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy, and there's like another one. And he's like stunned. I said, if they're going to be oil up there, it's a monopoly in that area of all the railroad traffic. I mean, Warren Buffett's not a dummy. He just bought a monopoly knowing what he was buying. Well, and they could get me off the stage with a hook.
Oh, yeah.
Any faster. And I've never been invited back. But I run into the producer at one of John's parties. And he says, well, how come you don't want to come on the show anymore? And I said, well, you know, I'm actually doing stuff in the morning. I'm managing money for people. And, I got to get dressed up, go down the block, which I don't mind that. And I said, but there's like five other people, and we never really get to talk. I mean, he goes, oh, yeah, that saved the show. And I go, what are you talking about? He goes, oh, yeah, you put four people on there that are experts, and you kind of dance around, never really come to a conclusion, and then a half hour later you get four other people and you talk about the same subject. You never let anybody run it to ground and actually give you the whole story. That's what saved the ratings. And I'm sitting there going, well, it may have saved the ratings, but I don't want to listen to that. As soon as somebody starts to dig deep into something, they can't wait to get rid of it and get the next guy start all over again. But that's entertainment, I guess, Jen. I don't, you know.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, that's exactly what they're looking for if they want ratings.
Yeah.
You know, it's about you satisfy everybody or dissatisfy everybody, you know, by not giving them a clear narrative or, you know, indicting anybody that they don't want to indict, because that's bad for business, depending on who that person is. So you keep it safe and you don't, you know, try to make trouble, but you make it look like there's some kind of level of contest between viewpoints. It gives the illusion of a discussion among, you know, people who don't agree, but, you know, it's all just for appearance.
I mean, I want, where do you think, how far are we going to be able to go? And, oh, by the way, I blame this, you know, on the Trump group currently and the current Federal Reserve, but I've seen it before, John, when you and I were very young. We were very young at one time. And back in the 60s, well, this guy, I wasn't listening in the 60s. You and I were too young. But I heard they interviewed a Federal Reserve guy, like, late in the 70s that had been on the Federal Reserve during the late 60s, early 70s when all this started, right? And, all the inflation then started. And they interviewed the guy, and he says, you know, we've got this inflation. The numbers kept coming in. And we were in total denial. He goes, meanwhile, there's this short little guy with glasses running around named Milton Friedman telling us that we were the cause of the problem, and nobody believed him. He says, so every month we would talk about, okay, we get this energy shock, so we're going to blame it on fuel. So we take fuel out of the mix. And then it affects food because, you know, you got to deliver the groceries to the store. So, okay, we took food out of the mix. He goes, next month we like took something else out of the mix. Finally, about a year later, we all looked at each other and said, you know what? We got inflation and we're the ones that are causing it. He goes, it took years of denial before finally we looked at each other in the face and go, you know, this guy's right. It's because we're putting too much money in the system. It's not because of oil. It's not because of anything else. We've met the enemy and he is us. Who said that? Whose quote was that? Some famous guy. Was it a general in the French army or somebody?
Not Pogo, was it?
Was it Pogo? Well, he wasn't a general. he was a general of Pogo or something. But yeah, what was it? We have met the enemy and he is us or something like that?
I think the Pogo comic strip, I can't remember what version of that I remember in that, but it might have been a military, you know, tactician, because that's a wake up call whenever that happens, and it has happened, you know, quite, you know, precipitously throughout history, when somebody, you know, realizes, oh my God, the thing I'm fighting for is what I've actually been fighting against. Oh my God.
Well, yeah, you know, what's the other one? I become what I detest.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's, if you look at right now what's happening, it's the exact same thing. Is the Vietnam situation? We're not going to raise taxes. We're going to pay for it by money that we're going to produce, print, whatever you want to call it, credit, like Carl talks about. We're going to pay for it. We're not going to raise taxes. We're not going to tell people at all the true cost of this war, and give them essentially a choice whether they want it or not. You know, it's like Bush invading, you know, Iraq. There were people that said over the next 30 years, with the injuries and stuff we're liable to get, and the fact now that we take care of people instead of just let them die in a battlefield. By the way, that's a lot cheaper, just letting them die, right? He guessed $1.5 trillion. Now, whether or not there is some total accounting of all the expenses from Gulf War II or not, I don't know, Jen. It probably is someplace, but I've never seen it. Now, if it's $1.5 trillion, if Bush were to come out and said, oh, by the way, we're going to do this, and everybody's going to have a 30% surcharge on their taxes for the next 5 years, I'm not so sure we'd have gone. Would you think we would have? The neocons would have said, I'm not doing that.
No, and no, of course, nobody in that run-up to war talked about how this would be paid for, ever.
Well, I mean, and this
time... It didn't even cost anything. Remember, you know, everybody said it was going to pay for itself.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, in
Vietnam... I mean, I don't know why people bought that, but they did.
But Vietnam was the same way. How many people... We're going to have probably Diana next week. How many people... when she's going to give us some sort of an assessment of what per month... The Vietnam War is still costing us in veteran homes, for God's sake. I mean, where does all that money come from? I mean, and yet, oh man, we got to knock off these communists, and we got to do body counts, and I can't believe, you know, think of it as what I'm not going to do this time, Jen. I fell for it that time for a while. I was so America plus, America first. You know, I wasn't like Trump, but I was damn near close to where if we're doing it, it must be right. Our people. All I kept thinking about was Eisenhower and Marshall and Roosevelt, and how those are the kind of people we have in charge, and we can always count on them. And man, oh man, that got flushed out of me pretty fast, and it, you know, and it's never come back. I don't think we have anybody like Eisenhower and Marshall and Roosevelt, and haven't had maybe since then. But I mean, all of a sudden now I see the exact same thing, doing some stuff, wasting a lot of dough, wasting some people, spending a lot of money. A lot of people are getting very rich off the whole thing, and somebody might end up with some oil, and it's not going to be you or me. And where am I wrong here?
No, it's no war, you know, has, you know, ever come out smelling any cleaner than the last one that I know of.
Well, I mean,
other than it's an intolerable solution to what everybody thinks is an intolerable geopolitical situation, and
we've
run out of options short of war. So it's always, you know, it's a desperate move.
The British Navy and the Battle of Lake Erie. Master Command... Boy, Kevin, thank you. Master Command Commandant Oliver Perry wrote to Major General William Henry Harrison,
yes.
We have met the enemy and they are ours. That's different than...
It happened in our own Great Lakes, yeah.
Well, no, that's different. That means that you conquered the other guys. That's not the same as saying that they are us.
Right.
I think Pogo might have changed that around.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened with, you know... Romanians under Ceausescu, when everybody defending him realized it turned on a dime when he was, you know, addressing that crowd, and realized that he just lost everybody's support, and that the people they were defending him were now turning on him because they saw in him the embodiment of everything they thought they were fighting against.
Well,
it's like, you can't pull back from that.
I mean, there's always going to be countries and people and companies. And I think one of the things that I am, I don't know if anybody really here has, I don't think Biden, that was my biggest disappointment with Obama, by the way, as I thought that he, even though I knew, when I say I knew, I had suspicions of how he got there, you know, with the CIA or somebody just essentially knocking down all the barricades and all the people in front of him, that he kind of rolled in there. And I was always very suspicious of Valerie Jarrett, who I think her parents were absolute CIA operatives, and she might have been. I mean, I can't prove any of this, but it seemed pretty strange to me. And when he didn't go after some of these bigger firms and then screwed up the Obamacare thing to such an extent, I couldn't vote for him the second time, because somehow or another, you can't get there now without having these people behind you. I mean, middle America has the ability, has lost them. And I don't know when we're going to put our big boy pads on. I was talking to a dude in a bar last week, and he's a retired. He's got to be 80 years. He's an old hippie, basically. Carpenter, at a big carpenter place. Nice guy, but he has some interesting views of the world. And he was saying, I think what Trump is doing, and Trump's no dummy when it comes to this stuff, with this election, he's trying to mess with the people with the mail-in ballots by saying, you got to run through ICE or something to be approved. Well, it's probably not going to happen, John, but just the fact that he lobs that one out there is going to make some people nervous about using a mail-in ballot. Let's all, somehow somebody's be looking over their shoulder.
Well, they should be nervous about it. Fine. Okay. The postal service tells you not to send checks in the mail. So is your ballot worth less than a check?
I'm not a fan of a mail-in ballot, right?
I'm totally opposed to it. It's
okay,
BS.
Behind the scenes here, you would say that the solution to that is for everybody to say, this bleep isn't going to push me around. I'm going to get off my dead ass and I'm going to go to the polling place. If the country actually cared and was not the laziest country that maybe that ever walked, that would be the solution, right? Except for one thing. In the last 10 years, how many voting places do you think have closed?
Well, why are they closed in time? It's because they have early voting for a month before the election. And think of the money that the Chicago Board of Election Commissioners alone burns through when they have these facilities sprinkled all over the city so that you can vote, a month before the actual election. And they have to be staffed with election judges from both parties. They have to have people monitoring the equipment. They have to have security.
Do me a favor. Don't make the mistake.
They have to pay rent on these places. I mean, no wonder there's no money for polling places.
Do me a favor. Don't make the mistake of, if you and I once in a while agree that we're not very big on mail-in ballots, that our view of why that it's not the right thing is not the same as Trump's. If we can close another 10,000 polling places and all of a sudden shut down mail-in ballots, you're not going to be able to
shut down early voting. That's the killer for the polling place shortage, believe me.
I don't know about that.
Well, I mean, I know what I got paid to be an election judge and the training I had to go through. And if the people who...
Too much. You were stuffing ballots.
Well, but the people being pushed through that system, at that time, early voting was, just on the horizon. And how that came to be such a preferred way of voting, I'll never understand. But what it did was suck all the resources out of election day budgeting. And
John,
threw it all over the place.
I think it depends on the person, I think. I mean, for me, it to do anything like that would be, unless I was out of town or something, is insane. I walk out in front of my door, walk three houses, a little park, and I walk in the door. Okay, but what if when my brothers, a couple of guys I'm going out with tonight, their polling place has, in the last two times, has been moved like five blocks away. So it's get in your car, get over there, trying to find a place to park. Now, if there was a downtown early voting place that I could sneak over at lunch, and if I was one of those guys, I'd go ahead and do that. And my brother used the mail-in ballot, like the president, because they moved the one from the little school down the block to the school four blocks away. So, we're going to reach a point, is what I'm saying, is the fallback position is we don't have enough places for people to vote. And don't think Trump's not thinking that. Some of these rural communities...
We're blowing money on polling places months ahead of time. They're functioning polling places.
John, I don't. You know my solution to this.
All those people who are being hired to be workers in whatever capacity had a day of service that they had to be there to open the thing up, and they had to be there to close it down, and they had to get the ballots to the central place for drop off, and then there were other people that tabulated it, just like they have now. But that was for one day of service, and now we get that spread over what?
There's only like three or four places that are early voting.
But have you ever been to one of them? They're full of people. They're full of stations to vote at.
John,
they're all sucking up electricity.
It's being
rented from some operation. God knows how they got the police for it. And there's people all over the parking lots. There's people distributing, you know, information about how to vote. I mean, this is where your payroll is going from.
John, Manny Weber, former producer, good friend, used to live upstairs. So he's living there. They weren't married yet, but he and Jill are living up there. He's telling me, God, I went to this early voting. God, did it suck. I had to walk up five flights of steps. The place is hotter than the hinges of hell. I'm sweating my ass off. And it took us like 2 hours to wait. I go, man, the polling place is 50 feet out the front door. What the hell's the matter with you? He goes, oh, really? you see the little park house? That's the voting place. He goes, well, then why the hell did I wait? I don't know. Well, Jill wanted to try out this early voting. You should have let her go herself.
Well, I think the one way to make sure that your polling place gets farther and farther away, mine does.
I was kind of stunned. Aren't you stunned at the number, though? 27,000 have closed? That's a lot.
What? Let's say that again. I'm sorry.
27,000 polling places have closed in the last 10 years? That's a lot.
Well, but because they've been consolidated, Tom. It's like
I've heard
a leverage buyout or something.
I've heard in some of these rural communities, the little towns.
They're thinking people don't miss them, Tom. I mean, this is how stupid this whole operation is. They think, well, this is just the march of progress. The people who go out to vote on Election Day now are considered to be so few and far between that who cares what they think? That they have to vote on.
Well, I mean, I think
place.
if you're gonna move the polling place from a little town in Mississippi to where somebody needs a car to get there, I think you might want to make sure the community has, some people have cars, don't you?
Well, it's because all those people that used to man the polling places that were far more numerous are now being, you know, pummeled with tasks like monitoring mail-in ballots and early voting stations and everything else.
You're never going to get me to think these mail-in ballots are a good thing. The idea that I think the part of two people standing there, one on one side, one on the other, and one in the middle, saying, okay, that person's okay to vote, I think that's pretty special. I really do. I don't like that.
Well, all I know, Tom, is that, you know, for about 10 or 12 years in my current, address here, my polling place was totally stable. And it was after they built the 17th District Police Headquarters over on Pulaski Road that, you know, they have various meeting rooms. They have CAPS meetings. They have, people in the neighbor can take the space for various purposes, and they had large rooms that could be subdivided into fairly usable spaces where you could have three or four precincts voting in there, and that's where I voted with the adjoining precincts in my corner.
Well, there used to be two in our park house. Now there's only one.
Yeah. Well, then there's none at the police headquarters now.
Yeah, but a guy like you doesn't want to walk by, the pictures on the wall.
Oh, Tom, it's because either they don't want to pay rent to the police department for the use of the space on Election Day, which they clearly aren't doing anymore. They're giving it looks like the public schools are the ones that now host the polling places that I'm aware of. The last two places I voted at, one a mile and 1 mile plus away from my address, are public schools, elementary schools. I never had voted in an elementary school before, the 2020 election.
What? I don't see how that...
This is all by, at least in Chicago, Tom, it's all by design.
Well...
And it's all about benefiting, somebody other than the police. I guess they don't want people in the police station.
The police.
But, it has everything to do with how they're trying to discourage people from voting on Election Day. They've done it magnificently in this city.
Well, Jan, come on. If we wanted people to vote... We would do like they do in Europe. We'd have the election on a Sunday when nobody's working, or a Saturday and Sunday, and let everybody vote. We don't want
just
that.
Just have it on one day would be a big improvement, though. I don't care what day it is. If they want to make it a national holiday, they'll make it Sunday. I really don't care. But make it one GD day. Be done with it.
Back in the day, not that long ago, I knew a lady who had been an election judge forever, and she told me that the absentee ballots, which had to be in by the election day, would come right to the precinct where the person was. And they were counted by the judges right there with the same scrutiny as if the person was standing in front of them. So you'd get one from, you know, Jim Lawler, who's in Afghanistan, and you'd look at the signature and you go, here's Jim's address. Now he's in Afghanistan, and they pass it through. I think now all those go to a central location. I don't like that at all, do you?
No, of course not. But that's by design too, Tom.
I never once said that this is all one-sided. I'd like to make it convenient for everybody, but that's not.
But Tom, it's now so convenient that everything is completely corruptible.
Well, the only thing I find bad about the mail-in ballots, and I don't know the solution to this. I don't know that the
stop it. That's the solution.
Okay, but I'm saying you have to have a signature. Okay, but you don't get to look at the person, which I think you need to do, and I'm with you on that. But somehow or another, the signature gets separated from the ballot. Which you want to do, because you don't want to know how people voted. I don't know how you can keep them together enough to where that you can have a recount that's reasonable and yet still not know how people voted. I don't know how you can do that. That's why I don't like it.
But that's why we have it, Tom, is because the people who want it know that this is a perfect way of, you know, sequestering ballots, making fake ones, counting them over and over and over again. And that did happen. I mean, there's photo evidence.
Well, I mean,
it wouldn't be possible if you didn't have the whole system.
Yeah, except you got a bunch of buffoons in Washington saying it only happened on one side. That's bullshit. If it happened, it happened both sides.
No, but we're, you know, the 13 million votes that Biden got in 2020 that magically vanished from, you know, the whole total voting, you know, caboose in 2024. To me, were just manufactured ballots.
Well,
they weren't real ballots.
I hope you.
Or they were multiple iterations of counting them, 13 million times over.
Well, in any case, we got to dash off to our other guy.
Where else have those 13 million people go?
I know it was all against poor Trump. John, thank you. We ever going to see you now that the weather's better? On your way to the polling.
Restricted, but not totally.
On the way to the polling place. Oh, by the way, real quick, how was your brunch? The Chief O'Neill. The Chief O'Neill's. The lady downstairs took.
Oh, it was first rate.
It was good.
Yeah. I strongly recommend it. It was very well run. It was very well attended. The service was great. The variety. I gave it a rave review on Yelp afterwards. I was very impressed, and the food was really high quality.
So you gave him a good review, and if I go there, I won't be able to get in.
It's always hard to get into Sunday brunch. Make a reservation. They've got like four or five seatings. You can do it on the website. But it's well worth it, Tom.
How many times did you go through the line?
Three.
There you go. I'm proud of you.
three and a half.
God. All right. Thanks a lot, bud. SP Futures down 16. NASDAQ Futures down 38. Not much considering yesterday. Do we have our guys, Jimmy?
Yes, we do.
Yes, I'm here.
How are you? You going to go mail and vote now after this big discussion?
Well, down here in Florida, I just like to, I have done mail and voting. A couple times I was overseas. I remember back in 1992, I happened to be in this country, this oil-rich country called the Sultanate of Brunei. And I had already, I did early voting is what it was. I didn't know who won the 92 election. And I called the embassy, and they had an answering machine. And nobody was there. And I had a heck of a time, even though there was radio and stuff. I mean, it wasn't what I was getting in the hotel room wasn't even in English. So I didn't know Bill Clinton actually had won the election until I got back to Hong Kong.
Really?
Which was like a 2 days later. Yeah.
Well, he was he won the election. Everybody, I think, and you guys know better than me, that none of the power elites in the Democratic Party wanted to run against Bush. And Clinton right. sort of did it saying, okay, I'll run against this guy. I'll probably lose. But that means when he's out 4 years from now, I'll win. But he ended up winning.
That's right. That's right. Because Bush, you know, the economy was terrible, if you remember back then.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what swept Clinton into office.
Well, the tax thing didn't help.
Oh, read my... Yeah, yeah. Actually, it's funny. I had a button for the 2000 election. I heard you mentioning that in Florida, and it was based on old man Bush saying, "Read my lips, no new taxes."
Yeah.
My button said, "Read my lips, no new Texans."
Oh, God. Well, you know, when he Bush too had just gotten elected, right, and it was my parents had just died, and I used that as an excuse to go down to Tucson and buy this old pickup, right, figuring I have to clean the house out, which I did. Well, my brother and me, and I did, and his kids. So I'm driving back, and I'm driving on 40, which is essentially old 66, right? All of old 66 wanders off. Boy, if you ever had some time, whenever 66 wandered off, you'd want to kind of wander off with it and then come back to the 40, right? But you have to have time.
Yeah, 66. I did drive a few years back. I drove after I got my second COVID vaccination. I was stir crazy. I had cabin fever. I went and bought a new car and drove from Florida to Los Angeles. A lot of it on Route 66, and you're right. It's really worth the drive.
But you have to wander off because a lot of the time 66 is
right.
40. And then or it's the access road to 40. So when you say a new car, you mean a new car or new to you?
A new car. I
really?
Just went to the dealership. I said, hey, I traded in my other one. They gave me something for it. But, I just said, I got to get out. I got to get out of the house.
Yeah. And the old one wasn't up for it, eh?
That one was, no, that wouldn't have made it.
Well, my grandfather, back in the day when, people had, like, Model A's and stuff, on two occasions when he drove, my grandmother was from Columbus, that's where the family all was, on two occasions when he drove down to Columbus, on all the little roads at the time, he showed up with a different car than he started with. The thing would conk out, and there'd be a farmer there, and
right.
farmer would say, well, I got a Model A, it's running, I know what's wrong with yours, how about give me $50 and we'll trade?
Okay.
It's, what a world, eh?
Yeah.
What do you make of, I think our guys, are going to have problems with Israel regarding this ceasefire.
Oh, boy.
Well, what do you think? I mean, it seems we've blown it up already.
Yeah.
Well, let me pop in on that.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got a basic problem when you're not working as normally done, particularly in something like a peace treaty, with written documents that are vetted by experienced people for in detail, because here you say the U.S. Press secretary and others say, well, it doesn't cover Lebanon, and Iran says it does, and Israel promptly went and bombed and killed people in Lebanon. And so when we use the word ceasefire, that's an aspiration, not necessarily reality. And there don't appear to be documents that people can point to decide the matter on Lebanon.
I don't think that right now, this is just one man's opinion, and boy, I'm far away from it. My feel, and you get a decent feel as you age, my feel is Netanyahu is using this as a license to take as much land as he possibly can all around him, and wants to do a Gaza thing and probably two other places. I really hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am.
No, I think you're right. And he wants the West Bank. Trump gave him the Golan Heights in his first term, and he wants at least southern Lebanon below the Litani River. There's no stopping him. Gaza is already under their control, and I would not be surprised to see him try to grab back the Sinai Peninsula if things get crosswise with Egypt.
Well, I mean, and he wants us to do that to Iran for them.
Oh, why not? Yeah. You know, you get... yeah, right.
I mean, it's a...
Oh, I should add that he did say that Turkey... he doesn't like Erdogan in Turkey. Of course, who does, but for different reasons. He said, look, after Iran, Turkey. So if he's looking at Turkey... I got news for Netanyahu. He can write off the future of Israel. There will still be a Turkey when there's no more Israel.
Well, I don't obviously.
They're
don't
fierce fight. They're fierce fighters, the Turks.
Well, Turkey is also a member of NATO.
That's true. That would help. That would alleviate the issue, though. If we pull out of NATO, then. We wouldn't be there to block NATO from, you know, coming to Turkey's assistance if Israel has something planned for Turkey.
Can Trump do that without Congress approval?
No, but he with this Congress, look what he's already done in violation of the laws and the Constitution. This is nothing more than a rubber stamp Congress, and I think that's why the Republicans are, if it's a free and fair election. And you know, I think that's the Hungarians have their election on April 12th, just a few days from now. And of course, Shady Vance, I call him Shady Vance, and Rubio were over there, and Vance actually endorsed Orban, which is an amazing thing for us to interfere in their election. But we've been doing
that since he got back in office.
That's true. So if Orban is thrown out of office over there, that's going to give me a little bit of give me a good feeling about our election midterm in November. Because if it happens in Hungary, it's going to be the sheer numbers. Orban's going to try to steal it, of course, but sheer numbers, it's very difficult if you've got a massive turnout against the incumbent.
Chief? Yep.
Just a history lesson. Golan Heights was taken in 67.
Yeah, there was.
And I've been there, and you can look down into Damascus. I would be very highly surprised if Israel would ever give that up.
Yeah, they didn't give him the Golan Heights.
He recognized. Trump is the one who recognized Israel's sovereignty over.
Okay, okay.
It was always
because they've had
disputed.
It's been disputed, but
They've had
Wayne,
it. Since...
Wayne, having been there, there is no way Syria could ever even attempt.
I agree with you because it's the high
ground. You can see Damascus without binoculars from the Golan Heights. I could easily, if you mass, troops, I would know about it well before you even got close.
Oh, sure. And look, it's like the portions of the West Bank are never going to be part of an independent Palestine because of what do you do with these massive numbers of these settlers? That's going to be a big issue.
Where are we going to ship the 4,000 Iranians they want to kick out of this country now? Did you see this?
Yeah, good.
Trump Rubio I visa revocations for nearly 4,000 Iranian elites. They're all elites.
Yeah, and some of them go back. Some of them are, were affiliated with the Shah. We welcomed to this country.
Our former guest Fari. His dad was the Shah's second in command of the Air Force.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, send them back to Iran, or they're going to be facing a death sentence.
I'm not so sure he'd want to go. I think his family was the last plane out.
Yeah,
this is crazy stuff. What happens if? I mean, I guess it's a call for Andrew. Andrew, what other than never Trump? Are the Democrats going to get any game anytime soon?
Oh, there's a great deal of thinking, strategic thinking, and internal debates and planning going on, and I can get into some of it. What aspect are you?
Well, I mean, the
most focused.
That's what I'm saying. The in Illinois, and it's the part that hits you in the face every day. I mean, this is going to sound crude, but you listen to Trump open his mouth, and you wonder how the hell we ever got this guy. And you listen to our mayor open his mouth, and you go, "That's how we got him." I mean, that wing of the Democratic Party is just as despicable to people as the crazy ring of the Republican Party, I think. Or where am I wrong? So if the Democrats are going to take the lead and say that group is going to win this time, I don't know about that.
Well, I think each voter, each non-voter who's got an opinion is going to weigh their own balance. But you pose a provocative question. That's what you do. But to say that someone's just as despicable. Well, let's drill down on that.
I don't mean personally. I mean in terms of what the policies that nobody wants any part of.
Well, yeah, but let me drill down on that for a moment. I think some of the issues that are probably in your mind are, let's say, crime, insiderism. You can articulate it better than me, but compared to ending a civilization, gas prices, loss of jobs that really affect people, are these kind of the traditional hammers against the Democratic Party, quote, just as despicable as the ruination of America?
You're an attorney. You got me here, okay? But my language was not quite right. But I mean, I think don't forget, Mr. Attorney, that what Trump ran on was stuff like crime in the streets, those kinds of things that really affect. Now, his ability to do anything about it, are probably minuscule when it comes. Well, he did send a bunch of ICE people here, that's what affects regular people. I mean,
I agree. I agree with you, and I don't mean to be unduly.
I want you that way. I want you argumentative,
detail oriented.
I want you argumentative because then I can dig all the best out of Andrew.
But it's exactly those issues of inflation, jobs, economy, and crime that were not. He's not meeting the moment. I think.
Oh, I'm with you on that. You're not going to get me on the pro-Trump side. I'm just saying that the idea of a mayor saying, "Well, we had 900 murders last year. This year we got 800. Everything's okay." No, it's not. I mean, the basic human rights that most people in Chicago and some areas don't have, Trump zeroed in on. And by the way, a lot of people feel that this is not good enough. This is not our society. Now, this morning, I'm listening to, all I care about, you guys know this, and that's why you're on the air, I think. All I care about is things getting better for everybody. Right, I really do, and I want things to be straight. I don't want the crooks to get ahead. I don't want some people to start owning newspapers and telling people what they should read and stuff. All this stuff's happening. It's why the three of us are on here together, I think. But now this morning, the big bitch in the city with the mayor and the Chicago Teachers Union is evidently there's some movement in Washington, Trump's people, that if you donate money to a private school, like 1,700 of it, can be considered tax deductible, if it's going to help pay for the tuition in those schools. In the city, here is apeshit about this. That this is going to screw with the public education. Guys, the public education here, except for a few charter schools, is terrible. Their cost, their overhead is twice any Catholic school or any charter school. I mean, why can't we have a debate on why is your overhead 300% and the other people's 100%? You're inefficient. You're paid too much. I mean, this has nothing to do with me not liking public education or not liking teachers. Why can't we ever zero in like we do on the right subject?
Okay, that would be great. And I actually tried to do that and spent a lot of time on it myself. And then somebody wrote a book about it. Instead of being jealous, I thought, oh, good. I don't have to do that now. Somebody else did a great job. But what the book was about was an investigation of a so-called public school reformer and how they had their own racket. And it was outrageous racket. So we do need investigations of all of these things, and once the investigations are published, someone to do something about it. So I'm all on board with that. But to get back to your mayor, he's not going to be running for president. He's got a constituency, and neither is Mamdani or likely even AOC. They have their constituencies. But if you want to take the broader public debate, including in these midterms, it's probably more important to look for people who are Democrats running in swing states. And I'll just mention a person and an issue and a state that I think is more reflective of what's going to happen. And that's Roy Cooper, the Democratic governor of North Carolina, running for the U.S. Senate, the Democrats haven't won a Senate seat since 1998, except for one term of Kay Hagan in 2008. And Cooper is probably going to win in part because he's running on a totally disastrous economic record of the Trump administration, including the total failure to provide disaster relief in Western North Carolina, which was hit by the floods years ago. And that's a red area. And the Trump administration is just, and the Republicans have just written it off, even though it's a red state area, but people are devastated and are not getting the traditional help. And I think those are the kinds of issues, not the kind of cultural war, hot button issues that are going to affect things. They tried the 10 transsexuals that are playing in high school sports somewhere in America or college sports. That's not, people don't have time for that anymore, I don't think.
I sure hope so. I'm hoping that you're gonna give me the names of 5 or 6. Democrats, see, just so you understand kind of my politics here, I've always been in the middle, probably a little bit to the right on fiscal numbers, and a little bit of left, way to the left, probably on helping people out, at least for a while, until the program shows it works or it doesn't. So that's kind of where I am. I honestly don't think there's that much difference between when you and I were growing up, a moderate Republican and a moderate Democrat. This extremism, I'm hoping you name me right now today, you and Wayne, here's 5 Democrats that you should keep your eye on, because these guys are real guys or ladies, and by the way, they got a future, they can talk, they're intelligent, and by the way, they can stand up on a stage with Trump and make a monkey out of him. I would love to hear those 5 names.
Well, let me go back to an iconic Chicago name, Mike Royko.
Yeah.
And I still remember a column of his from about, mid-1970s. And He was talking about a man who was elected vice president on kind of culture war issues, attacking the big city welfare apparatus and so forth. And the name was Spiro Agnew. And
what a piece of work.
Agnew was the hitman for another hitman, Richard Nixon, and they hit these cultural issues, you know, unspoken race element when they're going after people on welfare who don't deserve it, and landslide victory for the presidential election in 1972. And then it turns out that Agnew was himself so totally corrupt that he was forced out of office for bribery. And the relevant Royko column, I don't have the exact words, of course, but he says, here's a man who built a presidential victory on attacks on people scamming the system for an extra $50 a month. And he's got a bag man coming in with hundreds of thousands of dollars for himself. So what's the real justice? Continues, I think.
We're going to go to break here in a bit, not for a while. But, you know, maybe Wayne can be the referee on this, because it comes down to, and I don't know when I say it comes down to, when I was on the board of the SIBO, one of the things, I'm just a young guy from nowhere, right? So, but I'm fairly observant. And the thing that, there were all kinds of people on the board. There was like 20 people, right? And 18 or something. So, but they're from all different kind of walks of life. And you'd see people that couldn't necessarily understand some stuff, or didn't want to, or thought the big firms were... I mean, if you came in and told a story about, you know, a big firm, somebody gave a report about a couple of big firms were maybe cheating on some big orders, and there was a problem going on, that there was, you know, some rule violations that had to do with, you know, front running of orders, or you know, say the crowd says we're quarter three eighths, and the firm says, no, we're going to put this up at a half, and we want half of it, which means essentially you stole an eighth from somebody. People's, if it got somewhat technical like that, you could see people's eyes totally gloss over. But if you came in and said, here's a market maker, here's a guy like Wayne, and position limit was 2,000 contracts, and Wayne went over by 10 contracts 1 month and 15 the next and 20 the next, all of a sudden everybody, especially the market makers, the guys, the floor representatives on the board that maybe didn't have the education that I had or something, it's a horrible thing to say, they would jump on that like if it was a tick on a rat. They would this guy's a recidivist, we gotta whip him in the town square. Yet the big thing they really didn't even understand, they're willing to let that one go because it was like above their pay grade. But if you zeroed in on something that, why do I count every night and make sure that I'm under 2,000 contracts, yet this asshole doesn't seem to care and he's 2015 and 2020. It had nothing to do with whether or not the 10 contracts made any difference to the world, because it didn't. It had to do with just, this is something I can focus on. And I think Trump is no dummy. Trump understands that. I mean, you're not going to talk money supply to the general population. But if you start talking about some girl getting her nose broken by a guy in a volleyball game, that registers. You and I know it shouldn't, but I think it does.
Yeah, well, I agree with you, and I think we have to now pretty much separate the Trump of the last term and possibly early this term from what we've got now, because there's a lot of people are saying this. He's basically lost it. He's mentally not able to perform the duties as president. And I would just throw in this thing that just came out in the news, that it's one thing for him to bomb Iran, a nation of almost 100 million people. But it's another thing when the guy in charge of policy at the Pentagon, a guy named Elbridge Colby, the grandson of the late CIA director, William Colby, summons the papal nuncio, which is the Vatican ambassador in Washington, to the Pentagon. That's not the way it's supposed to be. The State Department or foreign ministries in other countries are the ones who summon ambassadors. But Colby summons the cardinal. His name is Christophe Pierre, handpicked by Pope Leo. Summons him to the Pentagon and tells him unless the Vatican starts aligning themselves with the U.S., we reserve the right to institute what's known as the Avignon Papacy. In the 1300s, the French basically kidnapped seven popes and made them rule from Avignon in southern France. This guy Colby was threatening to invade the Vatican, kidnap Pope Leo, and make him rule from Washington, D.C.
Anybody who's against them,
excuse me,
anybody who's against them, they're after. It's scary.
Yeah. This has infuriated me so much. I'm thinking about going down to Catholic Church here and converting just so I can, you know, say, look, I'm a Pope Leo fan.
You know, I don't, Andrew, you're a Chicago guy, even though you'll always going to be one, even though you weren't here that long. In the last 6 months, the church attendance in Catholic churches is going through the roof. One of Audrey's friends, my friend, she went to the Holy Thursday and Good Friday things last week, which, you know, they take like 3 hours. I used to do it when I was a kid. I hated it, right? You know, the stations are crossed and all that stuff. She goes, it was standing room only. She goes, last year there was hardly anybody there.
Well, it probably can't hurt that the Pope that we're talking about is from this outside of Chicago and is demonstrating in the situation that Wayne described and otherwise certain characteristics that we from the South Side tend to admire.
Yes, we do, don't we?
and part of that, and Wayne is an expert on this, but the threat that is only recently been reported that Wayne described did not go over well with Pope Leo.
I don't think he's going to be a guy easily intimidated.
No, and as people work backwards from what happened with this threat, we see some of his more recent words and policies he's not connecting the dots, but we can at least speculate that he's giving it back a lot better than he received. And one way that Wayne's educated me on a bit is the Pope's appointments and which parts of the church under his control he's elevating and diminishing. And maybe I'll leave it at that unless we're coming up on break.
Well, why don't you hold that thought. S&P futures down 21, NASDAQ futures down 53, which, by the way, considering the fact that the Strait is allegedly closed again after a huge run-up yesterday, this is not much of a sell-off. I mean, not much at all. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Listen, are you a 50-year-old person looking for term life insurance? Then you need to talk to Bob. Bob specializes in helping people find $1 million or more of term life insurance for a couple of $100 a month. Look, you need to know there's a price war in the term life insurance business, and you may be paying too much. Call Bob, and he'll shop and see how much money he can save you. Look, this could be the last term life insurance policy you ever have. Your rates are guaranteed for the next 20 years. That's right, guaranteed level rates for the next 20 years. And if you're a smoker or your health is not perfect, Bob has great rates for you too. So for $1 million of term life insurance coverage for a couple of $100 a month, call Bob right now. 800-989-1415. 800-989-1415. 800-989-1415. That's 800-989-1415. Paid for by Term Direct.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
We're back.
Load them up, baby. Stocks and jocks. I'm talking about Jimmy on the board. SP futures down 19. NASDAQ futures down 45. Just had the PCE come out, the number that nobody knows where it comes from. It came out as 0.4% month over month, which is what was expected. I don't know where the hell they're getting that, but that's one that it's a Fed's favorite number, according to most people, but nobody can even tell you what it is, so it's kind of bizarre. Over in Europe, we got the DAX down 263. That's a full 1%. We got the FTSE only down 31.3%. CAC around down 47.6. So down in Europe, but then nowhere near as much as they were up yesterday. Same thing over in Asia. Nikkei down 413.7%. Hang Seng down 140.5%. Shanghai down 28.7. So down, but not, like I said, not much compared to yesterday. 10-year, 4.3. The Bund, 0.05. Just as a review, as I keep saying about yesterday, yesterday S&P was up 165. NASDAQ up 617. So we're not even putting any kind of a dent into that. Oil, on the other hand, is back up $5 to 99.34. Brent up 321.97.96. RBOB back up 6 cents, 306. The core inflation was 0.3% as expected. This is, again, PCE, which I don't believe for a second. Gold down $12, 47.35, 65. Silver down $1, 74.33. Crypto, Bitcoin's down $8, 70, only $8, 71,266. Foreign exchange, which has been the big mover, dollar is 116.8 against the euro. And the British pound is 134. So it's going back and forth, 1.5%, 2%. And when we're done with the other stuff we were talking about with our guys, we're going to talk a little bit about that. Jimmy, we got for us traffic, weather, sports. Cubs win.
Cubs did win in traffic on the inbound. Kennedy is 28 minutes. On the inbound Edens, it's 42 from Lake Cook. Inbound Eisenhower, 38. And the inbound Dan Ryan is at 30. Weather-wise, in Phoenix, it is 67 degrees with a high of 97, and it will be partly sunny. In Chicago, we're right now at 60 degrees with a high of 67 with sporadic showers all day. Cubs did win, Sox did lose, and the Bulls played tonight. So that's our sports.
Guys, I know we have other things we need to continue to talk here, but well, I've got it on my mind. Andrew Wayne, you guys are not 15 anymore. Why am I getting this massive flashback of us being in some war someplace, read Vietnam, that we don't want to tell people how much it's going to cost, so we start pumping money into the system, and then we get all this inflation, which we deny being there, and blame it on the oil or the Arabs, wherever the hell it is. Why does it seem like I've been down this road before?
Yeah, and another thing is the word is out that come November, you got to wonder about their timing. They're going to start the draft registration again. Not the draft, but registering under the draft. So, yeah, if they really want to lose those midterm elections badly, well, go ahead and do that in November. I mean,
so right now, when you're 18, you don't have to register.
Apparently not. They're, you know, you're subject to it, but to me, this means that they're going to be reinstituting the draft boards and the whole Selective Service Commission, or you know, or, yay, we are flashback to the 60s and the early 70s.
Well, whether or not they do that, there are very ominous signs that what might have seemed impossible, particularly for a war of choice that didn't need to occur, at least anytime soon like this, could actually come into play. And you have these various alliances and different people's agendas, and it does have the great potential to get even more out of control, although threatening the end of a civilization, as our president did a couple days ago, it's hard to imagine something that much worse.
Well, it seems like we've moved pretty far in a few weeks from get the thugs out of office because the people in Iran are fantastic people. Now we want to bomb everybody. It's kind of a stretch. Yeah.
State that Wayne was talking about. Not to get too far off, and I'll try to keep this to a couple of sentences, but all of this propelled me to look back. How did World War One actually start? And I think we all know, well, the Archduke of the Austrian-Hungarian Empire was assassinated in 2014, but why did that create an entire world war almost without people thinking about it? And it's the two-sentence explanation that I refresh my recollection on because of what we're going through now is that there are a whole bunch of alliances that were brought into play that people thought, well, we'll just escalate because we've got a great alliance. And the fact that this assassination will prove to be a good excuse to get some more limited aim, and we've got the bigger and better alliance, so let's go for it. And next thing you know, you've got a world war that's killed over 100 million people.
Were those assassins the luckiest guys that ever lived? They missed them on the way going. The guy took the same street back, didn't he, or something?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, he missed the first time, and went to a coffee shop, and decided, or maybe he heard that the guy, you know, we got it from his compatriots who were all Serbian partisans. Yeah, we got to go try to get him again, and they did. They got him a second time.
Whenever I lob a book out there, I've yet to find one that you guys haven't read. Did you ever? I think we might have lost it in my mother's flood at their place. It was The Fall of the Dynasties. You ever read that?
I've heard of it. One of the better ones, of course, on that whole was The Guns of August on the start of World War One.
Well, these guys took. Was there five? Well, the guys in Germany were the Hohenzollerns, right? I think that's they were.
Yes,
well,
yes.
There's Hohenzollerns, Habsburgs.
Yeah, with the Habsburgs, then the
Romanovs in Russia and the Windsors in Britain.
But then there was who were the guys in Turkey? There was the
Ottomans. Yeah,
But they traced this thing. They said every one of the places was ridiculously corrupt. You know, they went through guys like Rasputin and all that stuff. The idiots that were in charge of. Evidently, the Russian thing was just a cesspool. the court.
Some of them didn't even speak Russian.
Yeah, I mean, it was all scripted. But they basically we had a period, and this kind of goes to what Andrew was saying. There was a period of, I'm going to say, Andrew, 20 years of, after the Civil War here, incredible technical innovation in weapons. A huge amount of an arms race that these guys, everybody was just buying stuff to beat the band. Incredible corruption. There was kind of recessions in all the places. It said whatever you did, it was just a matter of when. Looking for a spark, and this just happened to be the spark. But the book basically said if that never happened, you know, it would have happened 4 months later somewhere else or something, which is exactly what you're talking about, basically.
Yeah. My recollection is the armies would privately toast each other to, quote, the day, unquote, and the day would be when they'd get to go to war, which is, as we know from what was our great book about the Civil War,
like Killer Angels,
Badge of Courage.
Yeah,
it's a lot more fun than in the abstract than the reality. In fact, today is the anniversary of the surrender of Appomattox, and I was just reading before the show a treatment about it that Grant was just trying to slog through the day to get through his aches and pains, and he dressed basically in a private's uniform and then got epaulettes attached, and then he got a message that Lee was ready to surrender today.
Wow.
He went and Lee is there in his uniform, looking great, fresh uniform. And as the historian Heather Cox Richardson writes today, it was basically the Union Army's economic and day-to-day commitment and logistics that won the war over the dashing romance of this.
Well, they also, the South totally butchered their currency, which made it impossible for them to be supplied because their money supply went up 7 times in the... And their currency was very easily counterfeited, which made it even worse. Where the Union side, without even having a Fed, only really had their money go up 10% a year when they issued the greenback. So for wartime, for that era, they really kept their inflation in check, which made their people able to hang in there and produce stuff way more than the South could. But, you know, the thing about the Vietnam, and I keep... You know, why this gets to me is when I was young, I was, you know, very pro, well, I still am very pro-American, but I remember us going over there with, like, advisors, and then a couple of our guys got killed. Oh, bleep, we have to protect our advisors. Then we sent in some troops, and then somehow or another we got rid of the guy who was in charge of the place. And then, oh, my God, they got North Vietnamese regulars here, and not just Viet Cong. So that means we got to send more guys. And then
there was a false flag, remember, the Gulf of Tonkin resolution. Yeah. The two ships that we claim were attacked by the North Vietnamese were not attacked by the North Vietnamese. The whole thing was manufactured.
Well, then all of a sudden that's a Russian MiG up there. Now we got to send our best jets. Oh, the Chinese are helping. Everything became kind of a dare where we stepped up to meet, quote, the new challenge, which if you follow this in 6 weeks, 7 weeks, we're going to bomb them. Everybody's going to revolt. We knocked off their government. All the other guys are going to take power. Uh-oh, they're fighting back. Oh, they're doing that. Well, if they're going to do that, we got to do even more. Well, if they're going to do that, we got to do even more. Now, if they're going to close the strait, we got to buy. It's the exact same thing. You start something when you don't know where you're going, and then when all of a sudden the other side does stuff that you don't anticipate or maybe you don't plan for, then you got to get harsher and harsher, and you get it's the same progression. Or what am I missing?
No, that's it. And we don't even know. I mean, they say the Ayatollah's son was voted in as his replacement, but the word is that he's unconscious. He may be in a coma from that attack.
And really?
Who do we know? Nobody knows who we're dealing with over there.
Well, every time we deal with somebody, the Israelis kill him.
That's true too.
Well, let's go back to Vietnam, and a difference here that's actually worse, although, you know, so many hundreds of thousands died in that. There was also always the possibility of pulling out, and in fact, I'm studied compelling historical, although controversial, evidence that Kennedy was planning to do that, because he really fundamentally inherited that mission and didn't go along with it. And ultimately, yeah, Nixon did.
And look what happened to him.
That's a whole,
yeah,
whole other matter. But here, it's very hard to find a way out, particularly with our current leaders and negotiators. And it was instructive for me, at least, to listen to Michael Wolff, who's, you know, the biographer of Trump and so forth, talking about this on Tuesday. I think it was on a Daily Beast podcast, and he predicted that we'd back off, but he said he didn't know, and so he was correct that we backed off. But his more important point, I think, or at least other major point, was there's no good way out for the U.S., particularly given President Trump's mentality, that whatever he does, he's painted in a corner, because if there's a ceasefire, it's going to look like a loss, and he can't permit that, but he can't escalate reasonably. So it's a mess that, and again, arguably, that makes it worse than Vietnam.
Well, I love pushing back, Andrew, because whenever I do, I get more intelligent stuff out of you. I don't know about that, because I'm sure not going to debate you on whether Trump is sane or not. I think people at that level, and you guys know more about them than me, they're men of absolutely enormous egos, and well, whoever they are will never admit a mistake. As much as I'm not a Trumper, I don't know that his ego is any higher than LBJ's or Robert McNamara. Do you think those guys? I mean, when Robert McNamara descended on Hill 4812 last night, 80 of their people died, only 10 of ours. We won. I don't see Trump sinking to that level yet. He may, but I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, on a hill nobody even knows where the hell it is? Only 10 of our guys died, but 80 of their guys, therefore we won? I don't. That's about as low as I've ever heard.
I think, if I could just say, I think you both are correct. I think the one thing that's the same is the lying that's going on about the military operations over there. You know, Trump and Hegseth and these others all, you know, oh, we rescued our downed pilots in Iran. There's now information coming out of the Middle East that's strongly suggesting that this rescue operation was cover for a failed special operations mission to go into one of these nuclear facilities in Isfahan, which is a large city south of Tehran, to grab some uranium that we knew or thought we knew was there, and that this was as much a disaster, if you remember back in 1980, Jimmy Carter's failed mission to rescue the hostages in Tehran. You know, a sandstorm blew up and a helicopter collided with another aircraft. There's strong suggestions that this is the same thing that's happened. How many casualties suffer? We may never know that.
Well, have we ever reached the low point of not telling people when people die? I mean, I hope we're not doing that.
I think we're there now, and I think we were guilty of that back in Vietnam. Remember, it was always Walter Cronkite on the evening news would say, and MACV, which is Military Assistance Command Vietnam, they came out with these casualties, you know, 120 U.S. dead, then it'd be like 8,500 Viet Cong. And it was like, oh, what in the world? I mean, remember in the movie where Robin Williams, Good Morning Vietnam, and he you know, he's like, hey, this is BS.
Andrew and Wayne, it was a, and I can't find it, and I wish I could, and maybe one of you guys have heard of it, and you're better at this than me. When the show first started, somehow or another, I got this, I think one of the listeners sent it to me, like in the mail. It was a study by a guy, Andrew, you would know where the hell the guy got this. He studied the people in that had been to Vietnam and didn't die. We're talking, where are we, 2026? It's got to be 2015, you know, so we were all 11 years younger. And this guy put all these actuarial tables together. How he got the information, I have no idea, but he claimed there were 300,000 people, whatever his date was, and say 2012, that were in Vietnam that didn't die there, that are now dead today, that actuarially should be alive. Mm. And it didn't matter whether you were in the Army, whether you were a construction guy, whether you were a newspaper guy, whether it was the bad drugs, whether it was the Agent Orange hanging around in the air. But he said there's never been anything like this. Of course, how did anybody ever make that, you know, that sort of a... And, you know, we went to this, you know where Marengo is? It's out toward Freeport. Anyway, we go to funeral out there. Audrey's family, one of my friends. His mother's died. So we go out, and the funeral is at the grave site. There's no church. There's nothing like that for whatever reason. So we get there early, waiting for the body to show up. And I'm walking around. There's a section with all these veterans from, like, World War II and stuff. Guys, being Stocks and Jocks and knowing someday I'd be talking to guys like you, I'm looking at the ages, 58, 55, 62. Once in a while, you'd see a guy that was 70. Everybody, was it the smoking? Was all these people that go and serve, generally, they don't last that long. I mean,
let me pop in with that. I had a couple of relevant experiences after that. In my last time as a newspaper reporter, which was early 80s, so I had taken a course in law school on litigation of diseases and trying to establish some of the lectures were from Yale Medical School, and they did actuarial tables and studies that could be submitted for court cases. And the essence of it was it's only by looking at these kind of groupings of unexplained deaths that sometimes you identify a common cause. And that led shortly afterwards to things like the Agent Orange litigation and settlement with Vietnam era veterans. And of course,
Andrew, not to interrupt, did that settlement actually help anybody? Was there any kind of real money?
Yeah, I think so. Wayne would probably know more about this, but I actually worked with at the Hartford Current newspaper with a woman, Kathleen Palm, who had previously been a very dedicated volunteer helping the attorneys win that settlement. And yeah, if you've got cancer, money helps the family and a determination. And of course, the government didn't really want to admit that there was this lingering effect from the chemicals used, Agent Orange and others. And so these are part of the patterns of American society. And if I could add one other kind of relevant thing, it encouraged me to work on an investigative team on OSHA regulations. And one of the things that we learned on that was that many OSHA regulations at the time, and in fact still to this day, were created out of World War II standards of factories in terms of, let's say, chemical exposure. And so if you keel over on the production line because there's too many chemicals or whatever, that's one standard. But a much more complicated and controversial standard is if the chemicals cause disease 20 or 25 years later. And that gets very, very political, very controversial. And yet, do you want a standard of disease compensation and prevention that's only if it's so much you fall over?
Yeah, well,
right on the spot? Or do you want to capture into the cost of your production what happens 15 years later?
Well, it gets very difficult. I mean, sort of on the same story is the guy from the Bears, who was in the Hall of Fame, Steve McMichael, and he just died of Lou Gehrig's disease after a long fight.
Yeah.
Well, now it turns out they must have, as disgusting as it sounds, they must have sent his brain out to Boston, right? Well, they come back and they say, well, he had the, was it DTE? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Now, I would bet that if somebody were to sue the Bears or the NFL, the first thing they're going to say is, well, hell, he played college ball, didn't he? And the college
well,
say,
it's very yeah, complicated, yeah. And that was the point of this course I took. And I'll leave. We're getting at the end. Or
by the way, you know, Lou actually has an active case on all the different inoculations they gave people for Gulf War II.
Yeah, well,
they're having some of the same problems.
It's potentially very important. But here's what this visiting lecturer, Dr. Mark Cullen, head of the Yale Medical School Environmental Clinic said, and we use this in our reporting. He said, for a lot of these situations, chemicals and what have you, certain types of cancers, yes, you can make a compelling case to the VA or in court based on statistics. But for other types of cancers, let's say a brain cancer, there's no physical evidence. And only God knows what caused it. So you have to get into probabilities.
Well, two things. One is, next Thursday, Lou is still out. I'm trying to get Diane Kelly, who's our veterans Fisher House lady, and does a lot of work with the veterans. If I get her on Thursday, I was hoping maybe you guys can pile in a little bit earlier, because I want you to be able to talk to her as well.
Oh, sure.
That'd be great.
The other issue is what you just said, Wayne Boyd or Andrew, this stuff pops into my goofy head. I got a hair up my ass one day to go see a couple of stadiums, right? So I went to see where the hell did I go? I went to Pittsburgh, and then I went to Toronto, and I was in Detroit. Yeah, I was in Detroit. So I'm sitting next to this lady, and she's got these two twin sons that are taller than me, and we start talking, and she's telling me how she worked for one of these plants in Jackson, Michigan, that used to make net carburetors, the fuel injectors. And she said they made the best fuel injectors in the world, that even like Jaguar and people bought their. I think they originally might have been Ford, then they became Delphi. I don't know the progression. Someday maybe you guys can go through how a lot of these parts manufacturers, it used to be GM or Ford, became Delphi. Anyway, but she worked for this place, and somebody decided one day they were going to close the plant down and move to upstate New York because they lost the locomotive manufacturing, and evidently all kinds of people were out of work in, like, Syracuse and those kinds of places, and you get people cheaper than you could in Jackson, Michigan. Well, now immediately hair is going up on the back of my neck going, this sounds a little strange. And anyway, they closed the plant down. They moved people up there. It took forever to get going again, and her job was to, like, pieced together like little parts, and they sent like a million different parts. And I said, "Oh, by the way, are you a widow?" And she goes, "Well, yeah." I said, "Well, your husband, he died?" "Yeah." And she goes, he got this rare brain cancer. He worked in the plant, and she worked in the administrative area. And she goes, "There were like 5 or 6 cases of that here." And I didn't want to say anything, but I'm sitting there going, I wonder if that's the reason why they moved that plant.
Well, just to finish up here with reaction to your point, in this course I was taking, they said that's how many of these diseases are discovered, because people aren't just sitting around trying to dream up what to research, but, you know, down at the plant, people say, "Didn't Joe die of that? And what about Sammy? And what about Lou?" You know, and that's how things get started to prompt the research. And here's the last quick point that maybe we can get into, but it's a vital point, is that we learned, or I learned, that smoking combines with some of these hazards to, as I recall the statistics, sometimes make, let's say, a chemical exposure 7 or 8 times more dangerous if combined with smoking. So that's a factor that's huge, but it's a case-by-case aspect. And of course, in the Vietnam period that generated this discussion, lots of people were smoking to relieve stress. So perhaps that, or probably, that was a multiplier.
That's what happened to my cousin. But I mean, how do you tell somebody not to smoke if they think they're going to die the next day?
Well, of course, the incumbency, if we're talking about cancer, is minimum of 8 and usually about 12 years. So it's all in the distant past, which makes compensation...
Well, he was full into it. We were talking camels, unfiltered. guys, thank you. And next week, if I can get Diana on, that'll be terrific, because, I mean, you guys know more about that than me. I can just sit back and let you guys talk. How's that for a change?
Well, one of these days, let me tell you about Fort Detrick, Maryland, and unusual deaths.
Well, you know what? I'm sure... Maybe Thursday would be the time to talk about it, because
sounds good.
It seems like every one of these veterans places zeroes in on a specific issue, and maybe somebody's actually addressing what you're talking about, Wayne. Anyway, SP Futures down 16, NASDAQ Futures down 32. Did you guys get the call yesterday morning to buy booze?
Buy booze?
Booze, yeah, but I don't know about the futures. Anyway, we'll be back to Jimmy Knight's show. We'll be back tomorrow, Stacks and Jacks.
This is Bob Uecker saying thanks for watching.